G'day, it's Daniel Harford. Welcome to the Best of the Breakfast Club on RSN 927. It was jam-packed. Check it out. Great to have the company of Adam White with us on a Monday, which we can't say has happened. I don't reckon we've seen him on a Monday for 7 weeks, maybe six. White, it's a long time. Good morning.
Good morning. It has been a while, but after the weekend we've had of football and cricket, I had to be in here.
You had to.
I just had to.
Had to rally.
I had to.
Rally from fatigue, the deathbed, the GoFundMe page, which is still up and about to support your family through this time.
Yes, but I believe that there is someone else in the studio that is showing all sorts of courage to be here.
Well, I'm just pleased that we have a medical attendee on standby. Soph's back with you, and she might be required to assist Brendan Goddard, the former champion from the Bombers and the Saints, who's come in under duress, my understanding is. Soph's on standby. Good morning, BJ.
Morning, fellas.
Oh, no. Come on. Oh, dear.
Don't bring
it
down.
I'm the last one to fall.
No, come on.
Group.
Come on. I haven't fallen.
You haven't? You didn't fall.
Nah, courageous to the end. Courageous.
You stumbled real early in the in winter. Real early.
Me?
Him.
No, when?
No, Daniel.
He was early days.
Yeah, that's what I said. He stumbled early. Yeah.
I wasn't. Didn't have a day off, though.
Yes, you did.
When?
Oh, geez, you've got a short memory.
I think I might have. I did a couple of his
blend into one another.
I think yours was almost autumnal.
Oh, no, that was death. No, that was different.
That was death.
That was different. That was April. That was autumnal. That was April. That was a long time ago. That long ago, I'd forgotten about it, Brendan, until brought it back up.
I've cleared the sinuses. I've taken some medication this morning and didn't sleep very much last night, but pushing through. Didn't want to leave you boys hanging out. I didn't want to hang out to dry.
Well, teamwork. It's about teamwork, and you've committed to the team. And you've made sure that your role is being played today. And we appreciate that.
No worries.
This wasn't a result of being out there representing the Grammarians on the weekend, was it? Just in the
opening? Oh, maybe partly. I didn't feel very good that day either. So there was the signs early that I was coming down with something. Just didn't feel right. It wasn't a lack of fitness this time either. Wasn't that feeling.
Did you win?
We did.
We got 1 week left?
Two to go.
Oh, goodness.
So 120-point win on the weekend, which...
Well, that's not good for anyone.
You wouldn't say is ideal leading in the finals, but...
We're still on top?
Still on top.
Locked top spot away?
No. 2 weeks ago, Scotch is second, and then there's a bit of a gap.
Are you playing the rest of the games in the next 2 weeks?
It's a week-by-week proposition.
Does the coach know that, or is it just...
Oh, yeah.
Right, just you.
Punchy's across it all. We're in constant communication.
So Punchy during the week.
Great man, Punchy.
He was happy with your contribution.
Yes, I heard you were stirring the pot.
I was, absolutely I was.
didn't get the reaction I think you were hoping for.
Oh, I'm not so sure about that. It's a busy weekend, boys, on the back of the amateur football world, which you're a part of. The Australian football world was a big build-up, wasn't it? We'll talk more about it after seven, clearly, with Rocket. Did you get what you wanted out of round 22?
Oh, I think you have to say yes.
Just asking the question.
The two sort of qualifying finals were, if that's what it is for the first week of the finals, you've got to be pretty happy, I would have thought.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Did we learn anything? Maybe. I reckon the Richmond-West Coast game was clearly better than the Brisbane-Geelong game. so I think... They're probably the number one and two seeds based on what we saw on the weekend, but I think it's really important.
Can you say that though?
Isn't probably not, but I have. I felt the West Coast Richmond game was the best game.
It was a better game, but was that because of just the way that they play?
And no, I think
the contrasting styles and the way Geelong tried to slow the game.
I think
Brisbane
and Geelong were was a disappointing game, and it was a very conservative game until the last 15 minutes when Brisbane had to be bold because they got behind. And Geelong had a really good patch there just before half time.
But isn't that indicative of
how they play? Yeah, no, absolutely it is.
But I
feel, BJ, that Richmond and West Coast they've just got better players.
Just next level, yeah.
Yeah, and I think they're next level based on what we saw on the weekend. But, you know, again, we say this all the time, Half, with the way the teams are set up now, there are some different teams. A lot of teams play the same way, but I think it is going to be like a Grand Slam tennis tournament. It's just how the matchups are come the final series to see who you play and where you play them. will determine who the best, who the champions will be. Not necessarily the best team. It'll be the draw and how it all works out.
Yeah, I think I understand what you're saying. I still think, and after weekend's performance validation for Brisbane, for me, happened.
Absolutely. Yep.
Even though it was, in terms of the spectacle, was less than Richmond and West Coast yesterday. I think you just play what you're up against, and I think that's what happens. In particularly top four footy, you just play what you're up against, and you respond accordingly. I think that was the most pleasing part of the Lions' performance on Saturday, that they came up against a team that tried to sort of suck the life out of the game a bit and play really conservative footy. That's what Geelong were trying to do. And they found a way in the end to overcome that. And I just thought that was just a measure of being able to adapt to the circumstance.
The best part about it for me as a sort of a theatre goer, so to speak, is that Geelong's not winning, or Geelong didn't win trying to play a conservative brand, if you know what I mean. Like Richmond and West Coast, the Bulldogs, I like the fact that they're winning because they play an attractive brand of footy. They try and score. And I still, this is the sort of the uneducated in me, I see Geelong and I see all their good players and I just don't understand why they don't play a more aggressive style of football with the players they've got. But that's how they play.
It is how they play.
Does that make sense with what I say? Like I don't know. I just see them and you think all those
game,
good players
they?
They've got and they, you know, they just play that really sort of dour brand of footy sort of at times, you know, going the boundary and playing slow and all that sort of thing. And look, it's got them to pretty much top spot for most of the year. So it has been successful for them. But I just wonder, come a final series, whether, you know, the teams that can score so quickly and can be so damaging, whether that's going to cost them a final. I don't know.
We've been able to track down one of the best golfers on the planet, Abraham Anser, who, of course, was the Australian Open champion last year. He's going to be in the President's Cup representing the international team at Royal Melbourne later in the year in December. And he's been good enough to join us on The Breakfast Club right now, in fact. Abraham, good morning.
Hey, guys. Good morning. Thanks for having me on your show.
Not a problem, buddy. We are wrapped to have you on the program, and we're wrapped to have you at Royal Melbourne in December for the President's Cup. You've obviously got things in the meantime in the build-up to that, but just the opportunity to play in the President's Cup, to be the first Mexican to play in the President's Cup. How's that sit with you?
Oh, man, it's huge. I am so, so excited to go back to Australia and play in such a big event. That was one of my main goals for this season, is to get on that team, and I absolutely love my time in Australia last year and can't wait to be back. I mean, the fans out there were phenomenal, and I think for the President's Cup, it's going to be even better.
The impact of your Australian Open victory on your career since that victory last year in Sydney, how big an impact has that made on your career?
It was big. It was really big. It gave me a lot of confidence going into the season. Also gave me a lot of points towards the President's Cup team, which obviously was really big. And, I mean, I learned a lot. That was my first time in Australia, different kind of golf. I've never played over there, so I felt like I learned a lot, and I loved that kind of golf, which, like I said, was a lot of fun. The fans are great. And then after the Australian Open, I played the World Cup in Melbourne at Metro, which is pretty close to Royal Port Road. I totally confused here with the golf course. It's right on Melbourne, yeah. I absolutely love that kind of golf. And like I said, I'm ecstatic to be heading back to Australia.
So we're obviously really proud of our what we call the Sandbelt courses down here. And obviously you said you played at Metro last year.
Mm-hmm.
Did you get to go to Royal Melbourne to have a look when you were down?
We actually had a dinner presenting the new logo for the international team. And I got to see a little bit of the golf course. I didn't play or anything, but we got to see how it looked, and man, it looks really, really good. And I've heard nothing but great, great things. And I know pretty much every course in the Sandbelt is phenomenal.
So when you played at Metro, were you surprised? Because it is obviously very different to courses you would play in America and pretty much all around the world. What did you take out of that playing at Metro that week?
I wasn't surprised. I was just really enjoying it. I like how the bunkering is there, you know, how the greens just go straight to the bunker. There's no rough or anything. You have to be really creative around the greens. You have to really have a solid short game to get up and down, and I enjoy that. I enjoy, being able to, if you miss a green, you gotta be on your A game to get that ball up and down, which I really enjoy that.
Abraham, it'd be remiss of us to talk about not to talk about today and your efforts today, and then going on to next week in the FedEx Cup Finals. So you're peaking at the right time in terms of your form. How are you feeling about your chances next week? I know you're a little bit back in terms of points and the new system and the way next week plays out. But how's your form and how's today?
Yeah, I feel like I've been playing good all year. I mean, just whenever kind of the putter gets hot, I've had a good week. But yeah, like this week, I felt like I played okay. I just didn't really get much out of my rounds, and I feel like I'm playing really good.
And how
I'm looking forward to next. What's up?
Yeah, sorry. And how was today with Tiger? You played with Tiger, I believe.
Yeah, Tiger and Webb Simpson. We had a good time. Obviously, tons and tons of people. Played solid. Didn't make any birdies on the back or on the last 6-7 holes. I didn't give myself any opportunities, but I feel good. I feel good playing in front of all that people, and with Tiger, it's always fun to play.
We've been able to track down Adam Collins just in time, who's doing a hell of a job covering the Ashes for us on RSN 927. The Final Word podcast is going through the roof online. It is a juggernaut, and it's all because Collo is awesome, and he's a great Hawthorn supporter, and I'm sure he was watching Ruffy yesterday as well as the cricket at Lords. Collo, g'day.
Good morning, fellas. I certainly was. I was grateful for the rain delay this morning at Lords, which meant that I could watch the final term of Ruffy's career, have a bit of a cry. That's what I'm ashamed about. I remember that 2004 draft so well, and to think that Buddy, Ruffy and Jordan Lewis have played 10 flags between them, it's pretty cool.
Yes, it was a nice farewell to a home farewell anyway to Ruffy in front of the faithful yesterday, and a big win. We were talking before, Collo, about the test at Lords. Very rarely do you get a rain-interrupted test. It's so often rain-interrupted that has any sort of commentary or drama associated. But, boy, did we have a five-day window there at Lords.
This was awesome. I spoke to you guys at the end of day two, which was essentially day one because of the washout there. And after that, we had bulk of the third day rained out as well, probably the Friday rained out too. And to think that what we had this weekend on day four and five, we'll talk about that for a really long time, not least the spell of Jofra Archer, both against Stephen Smith and the sort of dramatic ending to that contest. And then what happened today with Marnus Labuschagne, who was just phenomenal after Usman Khawaja and David Warner fell to a different type of spell from Archer the day before. This was all about getting the ball full and moving around and in the corridor, and that's why he's the complete package. Of course, we can see how quick he is and how competitive he is with the way he bowled to Smith and Cummins subsequently. But the way that he kept the ball full to Warner and Khawaja is complete class. I mean, this guy is going to be the most important bowler of his generation, without a doubt.
What was the biggest story for you for the last 5 days? Was it the Steve Smith concussion situation, or was it Jofra's spell, or was it Marnus Labuschagne? What's the biggest story, talking point for you?
Well, I think what happened with Steve Smith stands out because it's the first time we've seen a concussion sub required, and just the fact that it was Stephen Smith and all the drama around trying to get that man out and the fact that they weren't able to get him out per se, although they did dismiss him, but that was after he returned from what we now know was a concussion, albeit one that took maybe 12 hours to finally start showing symptoms accordingly. But that Smith-Archer passage of play on Saturday afternoon, I mean, it's not one thing, it's several things happening at the same time. The most important batsman in the world facing the most exciting young bowler in the world on debut. It's Lords, it's an Ashes Test match, it's Saturday, which is the most prestigious day of that fixture. It's the middle session, everybody's watching. It's the passage of play, how desperately England needed to remove Smith then and there to have any opportunity of getting themselves a first innings lead. It all combined to be the most pulsating sort of 30 or 40 minutes of cricket that I could just about ever recall watching in the flesh, and to sort of see a version of it again this afternoon when Archer bowled before tea, and mentioned before Khawaja and Warner, but Labuschagne to have the presence of mind to get through that, also getting whacked on the head. If not for that grill, he would have had a broken jaw like Jeff Lawson back in 1988-89. Make no mistake, that ball would have broken his jaw to smithereens. But yet to recover from that, to be beaten outside the off stump repeatedly, but to just maintain that calm disposition to play straight to Archer, to come back after tea and get him out of the attack, albeit briefly. He's the reason why Australia leave here 1-0 up instead of 1-1 to lead, because if Archer gets, if Archer rather gets Labuschagne and gets on a roll before tea. With so many overs available to them in that extended final session, there's every chance that Australia lose this test, and that would have been quite the turn-up considering the way they played on day one.
Colin, we could talk about this match for about 16 hours, and obviously we can't. But just with Archer now, does it completely change the test series? And are Australia as a collective, are they rattled by what they've seen? Because they know him. He's played in the Big Bash, but I kind of feel that I'm not sure they thought he could do what he did.
Yeah, Whitey, this was different gravy. Yes, we've seen him in the Big Bash. Yes, we've seen him in the World Cup. But as I kept banging away before this match, he's better with the red ball. He's better when he can build up pressure. He's so consistent. The amount of movement he generates in red ball Duke's conditions, if you like, means that he was always going to be more of a handful in a test match than he has been in white ball cricket. When there is a degree of everyone swinging, from the get-go in T20 cricket, and rightly so, it's a different form of the game. But having your technique and defence tested the way that Archer was able to do consistently from the first evening where he bowled, when he was sending them down at Warner and Bancroft, all the way until the very end today when Travis Head was doing his best to stay out there and not get himself nicked off. It was just a compelling spectacle to watch. The fact that the bulk of it happened in excess of 90 miles an hour just adds to the theatre. Look, the way that he conducted himself throughout the week as a professional cricketer, I mean, it would have been hard after what happened with Smith and Labuschagne. We see with fast bowlers sometimes they can lose their bundle after an episode like that, but he stuck to the task as well. He's just such it's hard to sort of put into words just how compelling a player he is. I mean, I saw some of the disparaging remarks towards him on social media from people who hadn't seen the episode and were up in the middle of the night and might have caught a couple of unfortunate screenshots, but that's not what happened either. I mean, the way that was presented by some clickbait merchants was, well, precisely that, wasn't it? It was an exercise in trying to hoard a bunch of likes and faves and so forth. It wasn't a reflection of what actually happened, and that's a regrettable piece of subtext from the match. But hopefully, after today, people can focus on what was happening between Archer and Smith, and then subsequently between Archer and Khawaja and Warner and Labuschagne, and we can appreciate and respect the fact that, yes, it was high-octane cricket, yes, there was a degree of danger associated as well, but it was absolutely compelling, and I'm sure as cricket people, we can respect what we've seen over the last couple of days.
Rocket, who cares about footy, and he's our Monday analyst, and he's back again after a big weekend. Good morning to you, Rodney.
Hi, Daniel. How are you, buddy?
Very well. Thank you.
It's good to hear.
Very well indeed.
How was your game yesterday?
I loved the game yesterday. Richmond West Coast.
Yes, it was good, wasn't it?
Yesterday, it was we spoke before, Rocket, about round 22 and what it promised, particularly from a top four showdown perspective. And I think we got what we wanted, didn't we?
Yeah, I think those four show there's a bit of a line. Maybe the pies are coming a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think there's outside that five can win it. I think it's down to those five and who can perform best in that four-week period.
It was like the Richmond-West Coast game. It was like if it was a tennis match, West Coast in the first set or like the first quarter just won it 6-love or 6-1. It was just like they couldn't do a thing wrong, but Richmond just held their nerve and didn't panic and just found a way to get back into the contest. It was fascinating to see how good West Coast was. And at quarter time, would they keep it going or would Richmond find a way to get back into it?
Yeah, because interesting, games like that, when it's ebb and flow or someone gets the momentum, generally there's a shift in style or a shift, maybe some magnets and different stuff, but it was really just around the ball. And the West Coast controlled everything around a contest, especially stoppages. And then Richmond got the ascendancy there and were able to get inside 50s through Martin mainly, but Edwards lifted.
Yeah, he was good.
So they able and Shuey and Yo and that just sort of plateaued a bit during that period. Then it didn't look as though they were going to score West Coast in the last quarter. And those two quarters they didn't much, and then the last quarter they lifted again. They got behind, and all of a sudden, about the 10-minute mark of the last quarter, they lift their intensity around the ball as well.
I think it was 24-12 half the clearances there at one point early in the match.
Early in the match,
West Coast way, which was one of the key reasons why they had the dominance. So, when you're a coach and you see the game sort of slipping away, and a lot of it was through not so much positional play, but with Richmond having the players behind the footy and West Coast being unable to score, when you're the coach, is it things that you can see that you say, well, I've just got to change this right now? Or is it constant communication with your assistants to say, what are we going to do here? Because we're going to might have to do something dramatic. How quickly can you make the change, and how much can you talk about it before you have to act?
I think those things are discussed in the box. You say, well, this looks like it's happening. We're losing our, and they were losing their forward structure. The forwards are coming up too high, because Richmond loved to have that anchor, whoever it is. Now they were generating it. Even if the West Coast had five forwards, they generated a seventh defender. Mm. So Lambert would come up as half forward, going around the ball, winger would drop back, and that allow Hooley or Grimes to be free. And that last one is always 60, 80 metres off the ball consistently. During that third quarter especially, West Coast just lost their structure. They all went chasing the footy. So you can see that happening, and then you discuss, what do we do? Do we just instruct our forwards to keep a little bit more at home, try and be a bit more accountable, make it 5-on-6 or 6-on-7 as such? But really it was, especially when it's wet, it's more about the application of winning the ball around. And I thought West Coast, which was unusual for them, they just hacked the ball forward. I know Richmond surge, but every now and then they'd have a good handball, release a player, then they'd run and carry the footy. Now they'd take their full 15 metres, where West Coast are just stationary and just king ball. So I think that type of play then is difficult to change. You have to wait to the break, really, to be able to tell them what they're doing, especially with no runners now. Mm. It's going to be difficult for a coach to do that. So now that West Coast adjusted that in the last quarter, and they're able to get a bit more fluency, even though it was difficult conditions. But as far as staying at home, and you know, I thought Ryan and Rioli and these players were way up the ground, and then there was no way they were going to score.
It's one thing you can't do against Richmond is your high forwards get too high up. But West Coast have been great at having the ability to get up and then reset the ground really quickly, and that's when they're most dangerous, running back towards goal. But Richmond, in my opinion, you have to equalise the number behind the ball, because as Rocket's alluding to, they literally have that wicket keeper as such sitting 60, 80 metres behind the ball, and they all defend accordingly. So it's on purpose, not by fluke. So then the opposition look up and there's an out number, and obviously the umpire, now you've only got, was it 4 seconds? They rush you to play on, so you've got to end up dumping it, and then they've always got an out number at the contest down the line. So, yeah, in my opinion, you have to equalise the numbers on Richmond in your forward half.
It was a crazy game half in the sense that it looked like West Coast were untouchable early, and yep. Then it looked like, structurally, there's no way Richmond can lose this because West Coast can't score.
Mm.
And then, somehow, and I don't know how, and I'm interested in your thoughts on this, how West Coast got back into it. Because it did look like Richmond were going to go away and win by 4 or 5 goals, and then the Eagles nearly pinch it.
Well, they got a few clearances in that last quarter. Dom Sheed had a really important role in that last quarter, and they were able to get the ball, which is what they tried to do initially, Rocket, get a ball deep inside their forward 50 and put some pressure on the defenders of the Tigers, overlap or get over the majority of the defenders to a one-on-one. It ended up being Kennedy and Grimes or Asprey at times in the last quarter. So they got it deep and put some pressure on. Kennedy got involved in the one-on-one. Then they got some flow goals. I mean, that goal to Waterman, 45 out mm-hmm. on the angle, was a really good goal, which yep. got them rolling. And Cripps has just got a knack of finding a way to kick goals wherever he is in the world.
But I think he
made it from Thailand with Pat Cannon. He kicked goals from there.
I think you made the point, though, that Kennedy was playing closer to home.
Yep.
Where Kennedy and Darling as their targets. You talk about high forwards, Brendan, being up. But the target forwards were way up the ground as well. And normally on a dry day, they'll be able to get back because they're great athletes. They'll be able to run. But on a wet day when there's no flow with the ball and it's just a hack kick, made it a bit more difficult, where they probably needed to, and they did in the last quarter, they were able to plant themselves a bit closer to goal.
All right, so we've seen two of the best teams go at it at the MCG where the grand finals play, the two last champions.
Yes.
Half, have you got a different view of either of those two teams based on what you saw live on Sunday?
No, I've been on the Tiger train for a little while now, and I've absolute respect for West Coast, and that doesn't change after yesterday. I think the rain certainly helped Richmond yesterday, coming in half time, and that we know that their style and system works as effectively in rain as any team's ever had a system that works in rain. So I think that certainly helped. I lost nothing for West Coast yesterday. Rocket, you?
No, not at all. And when it was dry, they looked fantastic. I mean, the second quarter, they went to sleep a little bit, but I think... Yeah, they'll be difficult to beat. Now Richmond will get Nankervis and Cochin back. Depends now on Grimes. And I've said here about a month ago, it's a worry for me if they get injuries.
Mm.
And that's the same with any team, but they haven't had the continuity, Richmond, with some of their players. But they're coping with it really well. They're playing some good footy. I think Nankervis is vital to them, but he's missed, and you wouldn't want him to miss too many because he's more, obviously going forward, because he's missed a lot of football, and he needs continuity. Because if he plays this week, then there's a bye. He hasn't had a lot of football going to the first final. So,
Dustin Martin's back to 2017 form. His performance in the last 10 weeks, I reckon, has been off the charts.
No doubt.
Off the charts.
I think he's the best player in the competition at the moment. I mean, there's a good list now with Bondebelli and Fife. And
we have this discussion
and
every week, Cripps though.
I know, but the thing with, Martin is that he's such a good user of the ball and such a great decision maker, whereas there's, you know, with Dangerfield and Fife, there's issues sometimes with, kicking. Their kicking, whereas he seems to be the complete player.
And in the wet too, he just about his cleanliness with the ball, his touch. He fumbled one early when it was starting to rain, but other than that, he just was so clean. And his ability to get out of it, I know he does a another don't argue, but there was times he just moved sideways. They tried to tackle him just with his strength. He was able to get by and just set the game up.
His hip swivel was strong yesterday. He had a couple of real swivel hip moments, and I thought, wow, he's back. He's feeling it.
But you referenced his year from a couple of years ago. That's what it felt like, and this is the best two teams at it.
Yeah.
And he looked like a 16-year-old playing under 12s.
So in the final, do we tag him, BJ?
Interestingly, Hutchings went down yesterday. He was playing forward, defensive role on Hooley initially, it looked like. So he started forward for the West Coast. He wasn't tagging Rocket, which I thought was unusual, I must admit. So he's gone now with some sort of injury. That's going to be a blow for them coming into a finals campaign.
Does the West Coast like... who did Yo take on? Cripps. So does Yo go to Martin?
Well, Martin plays a different role. So
he doesn't go past halfway.
Yeah, he predominantly plays forward. So you must... That's why it's hard to play as a mid on him as a tagger or a run with. So then he just will start walking out of stoppages and drift
forward. So what you could do is Lambert goes up and plays as actually covers for him.
Correct.
So Lambert's man, Edwards. You can start Hutchings at half back and he can take Martin.
And Lambert comes up, you drop off, but then you still got to have accountability at stoppage. So it's someone that's been able to play both midfield and half back, so then go and defend him one-on-one when he is... last out the back. So that's why he's such a hard matchup, and that's why it works so well. And he is hard to tag because it's you got to have someone that can defend him as a defender when he's forward, and not many of those guys then come up and actually, you know, they can go and stand next to him in stoppage, but in terms of stoppage craft, they don't have the tricks that he has. So that's where he can get them either way.
Do you reckon big Tommy Barras is not really looking forward to the review, his individual edit tape? He made some blues yesterday.
Handball.
He made some errors yesterday, Tommy. It can happen to the best of us. So no shame there for Tommy, but it was a bit of a setback for him. What about, as we move on from that game, just some of the incidents in it, or a couple of incidents. The studs up interpretation rocket. Jack Rewalt was hit a couple of times yesterday. Your take on that?
I think it's against the spirit of the game. I think really with the studs up, it's more danger and above the shoulders. The first one was on the shorts and touched some skin in the leg, so it was... So if I was Jack, I'd be very frustrated. So I imagine that Damien Hardwick could be on the phone to get some clarification on that. It'd be interesting to see what the AFL say. But I wouldn't have thought that was the intention of the AFL to take that out of the game.
That's not the intent of Jack either. I saw one. But he's there to try and get leverage off his opponent who's standing in front of him.
It's a bit the same as using your body to create some space.
Yeah,
let's have a listen to Damien Hardwick, who was speaking about it post-game. I think you might be right, Rocket, that he might be looking for some clarification.
I don't think that's what the rule was brought in for. If you don't want high marks in the game, come on. I don't know. I don't think it's a good look. End of the day, the rule for me was brought in for the guy that kicks the guy in the head. Last time I looked, that player's head wasn't on his hamstring. Have some common sense. I didn't know why we needed the rule in the first place, to be perfectly honest. We seem to have a very reactive nature at stages. The game of AFL is so tough on these blokes. Don't give them so many rules.
Damien Hardwick there with some feedback for the lawmakers.
That is 100% correct. And this is the whole problem, and fans get so frustrated by what the umpires do at times because they just make it so hard to umpire the game. And so reactionary at times.
But everyone's critical of the umpires. It's not the umpires' fault.
Exactly, that's my point.
Yeah, it's not the umpires' fault.
That's exactly my point.
So the rule, as has been written, what happened yesterday was a free kick.
Yeah.
But it's just wrong.
That's right.
Do you know what I'd do if I was involved with the umpires there? You'd go to the umpires and say, what is the best way to interpret these rules? What is the easiest way to make it black and white? Then take that back to the AFL and the clubs and say, well, this is the way we're umpiring it. It'd be a minor shift. Clubs and players will adjust, but at the moment it's making it so difficult for the umpires. Even a 50-metre penalty, holding the ball, that interpretation.
And that's exactly right. And the other one, which annoys a lot of people, is just this focus on a rule from week to week. It's just like the same every week.
It's like the jumper punch. Yeah, they did absolutely. That round three or four, and it cost Hawthorn those three
absolutely.
Goals.
Absolutely.
Then they didn't do it the next week.
And it's probably going to cost Hawthorn a spot in the finals.
Yeah, it is. There's no doubt.
So I totally agree with the game's hard to umpire for umpires, but where's the responsibility of umpires for having a feel for the game? I understand technically it's a free kick, but let's be honest. Where's the feel saying... Well,
There's no window for field above.
Yeah, I know. That's why I reckon umpires get it right. So even though they're told, because I'm saying a lot of the new umpires now are very, it's very, very black and white.
Oh, yeah, it's very literal what they do.
Yeah, literal.
But I would imagine, though, BJ, that today, and I'm guessing a bit, but I would imagine that the AFL will come out and say that they were the right free kicks.
They will.
So the umpires got it right.
Yeah. So then they're only feeding the beast.
That's right.
And what do we say to players? I'm not worried about what our people say outside. I only answer to my coach. So the coach is saying, you've done the right thing. The umpire's coach is saying, well, you've done that, you know, made the right decision. Okay, well, I'm right. I've got to tick. I don't want to go to my review and get my backside kick because I made the wrong decision.
I agree with you, BJ, but there's no scope for feel. Mm. You're umpired to the law. Feel doesn't come into it. And I understand exactly what you're saying, but there's no scope. And until such time as there is interpretation changes or they alter the wording of that stupid rule, that will be what we'll see. That's the reality of it. They've got umpire to the rule.
Can't be that hard, can it?
Well, we make it that hard. The law.
No, I'm not saying it's hard to umpire. I sympathise with them, but it's not that hard to write and get the wording right.
And the people have got to make it above who are making the rules, who are jumping on umpires, they've got to make them have a bit of a feel for the game as well.
They're the people that need the feel, yes. The lawmakers.
Well, it was interesting because Eddie Maguire was broadcasting the game yesterday and he's on the committee. And he actually said, well, I was one of the ones that said that we had to bring this rule in, but that really should have been a free kick. And it's just like, well, you know, this is the problem we've got now because you want to keep putting in make reactionary decisions to what we see out on the field. You're going to be chasing your tail the whole time.
There's unintended consequences, and then you've got to defend yourself.
Yep.
And they shouldn't. The AFL wouldn't want to be discussing this.
No.
So they're going to be spending all their time defending this, which is major in our eyes, but it's minor in their ways. They've got other things to worry about.
Goes without saying, doesn't it, really? The boys have established some momentum in recent times, and it's been impressive the way our players and all our staff who support them, including our coaches, have really applied themselves and persevered, and now we've given ourselves a little bit of a look at it, and our challenge is to keep our heads in it and focus on our next opponent this week.
Which is the Adelaide Crows in Ballarat. That's the voice of Luke Beveridge, the coach of the Western Bulldogs, who were very, very impressive again yesterday at Giants Stadium against the Giants. You know what, boys? They trailed by 3 points at halftime, and they won by 61.
They were 17 down just before halftime. They kicked the last two goals. Last three or four shots at goal before halftime.
What about this for the Bulldogs after halftime in the past fortnight, last six quarters? 21-17, 143 to 3-11, 29. That's emphatic. On the flip side of that, the Giants, after halftime in the last 2 weeks, so after halftime of both games, nine behinds to 17-14, 116.
Got some problems.
They've got some issues. Let's focus on the positive first with the Bulldogs, because as this SMS has told us today, the Dogs have now beaten 1st, 2nd, 4th, 6th and 7th, and they're not yet inside the 8 rocket.
And they've lost to 18th.
And 16th.
16th.
Doesn't make a lot of sense.
No, I think one thing you can take to the bank, I know you guys are punters, they'll win this week. Adelaide in the cold at Ballarat are no chance of turning up.
Well, Adelaide will get to them shortly.
They are gone. They are Max gone.
Big Max. As gone as Max.
No, they are very impressive. I saw the last half yesterday, but their handball ability to move the ball, and then they become better kicking the footy. Mm. As far as picking options and their entries inside 50, a lot more efficient, but a lot more purpose when they go. A combination of long and short. The Giants, we'll talk about it in a minute, but they've got some, we made a bit of fun, but gee, they're really struggling. They are battling. They're going to be out in straight sets in the finals when it comes.
The Dogs structurally have made change sort of about a third of the way through the season, maybe halfway through the season, where they've actually started to keep their forwards at home more. So I think that's made a big difference in their connectivity from midfield to forward.
And it's not as hard on them as it was, get up the ground.
Yeah, physically.
Ground,
yeah, that's right. That's right. But, I mean, their midfield and the numbers that they get through the midfield, I mean, McRae had another 38, Dunkley had another 30, but it's just so deep because Lipinski's playing some really good footy. He looks a really nice
player. And McLean's back.
McLean's back. Yeah, so they've just got so many numbers. Is it sustainable with what they're doing, Rocket? Because it's a different Bulldogs. It's more, we talked about on Friday, more razzle-dazzle with the way they go about it than the blue collar of a couple of years ago. Is it a real worry for the rest of the competition what this team's coming and what they're coming
Oh, for
with?
Sure. There's no doubt. Whoever they play in the first final, so it's a Pies, or even it's Richmond. We talk about Richmond. If Richmond slip up this week and get fifth, you wouldn't want to play the Bulldogs.
No.
A, in form and confidence, but B, what they're able to do. And kicking bigger scores. And I think the structure, you talk about structure, and no, Norton's a good player, but even Shacky, even though he's a young lad and he's got a fair bit to go, just give him that bit of height. And you've got Dixon, you've got Lloyd, you can kick goals, and then the mids kick goals. So they've got a really dangerous side. And I think it is sustainable because they've got so much depth in the midfield. They can throw some players through there. It's just not... And I tell you, he's a good player too. Young Bailey Smith's a good player for his first year. He's a really good player. And kicked a really good goal just after halftime to make the game even. So they've got some really good midfield depth, and we know the Bont and can go there and go forward as well. So him, if he goes forward, he's the third tall now. So he's so dangerous. Their rucks are an issue, obviously, and maybe a tall defender if they play a side on a dry day that can mark the ball. So that's why they used to get numbers back so much, was to try and protect their defence. So if English gets back and he's out ill, then you've got Trengove and go back, which I think he's quite vital to him, Trengove down there. They had him out of the side for quite a long time, but at least he can compete, and he's a bit of a scrapper, and he's physical, so that does help take some pressure off Cordy and those guys.
It is an interesting question about whether or not it is sustainable, because what they did on the weekend was play the forward half game really well. And they scored, I think it was 10 goals or so from forward half. Sorry, 6 goals, 7 from forward half intercepts, 9 goals, 10 from intercepts, full stop. So the Giants turned the ball over a fair bit in their back half through the pressure and the way that they'd set up. And what we've seen the last couple of weeks, and they've kicked 100 points three times in the last 4 weeks, the Bulldogs, is that they've scored a lot from the back half as well. And that's really that's the question mark in footy these days, about whether or not that is a sustainable brand, particularly in finals. And we've talked about that on By the Numbers, the award-winning podcast, which will be available Thursday in your podcast stores. That's the question. But what they did on the weekend, or yesterday, was score from the forward half, BJ, which is another element which they needed to probably add, building into a finals campaign.
Yeah, in particular. And 20 tackles inside 50s, which is a very high number. So that's the impressive thing. They've got the ability to move the ball from the back half but pretty swiftly and score, but then adding that forward half game to their overall game is going to hold them... or give themselves a better chance come finals time against better opposition, better defensive teams. So when they don't have that ability to move the ball from the back half and around score from stoppages with a high handball, and then they've got to go to the nuts and bolts, and that's the forward half game pressure, score from turnover, re-entry, which will give themselves the best chance of performing in finals.
Now, as the equation is, they have to win. They have to beat Adelaide in Ballarat.
Correct.
But then they have the confidence of knowing that they've flogged both the Giants and Essendon, who sit in their part of the draw in that first week of the finals, because they'll either play... well, they'll probably play the Giants.
Yeah,
but again,
all being equal, they'll play the Giants.
Or they've got potentially a Collingwood matchup, which they haven't beaten them. They've played them twice this year, but they almost beat them on both occasions. So
they're a
very
team
different
now.
Team. Very different team.
Doesn't 5v8, so they're...
Yeah, but it could be the Giants.
Oh, they could go up to 7. They could go up to 7. The best and lose.
Well.
The best and lose.
So it's Collingwood Essendon.
It could be Collingwood Essendon 2 weeks in a row.
Yep.
But good luck trying to do your ladder predictor, because you come up with a different result every time you do it.
Every time. What about the Giants then, Rock? I mean, they're obviously still in finals calculation. They're sitting, well, not calculation, they're in the finals. That's where they are. They're sixth at the moment. They're locked. But their last couple of weeks have been atrocious.
And I reckon it even goes back further. I think we. Port Adelaide, they held on for a one-point win.
Yep.
It was on the back of Haynes and Davis holding them up. Mm-hmm. Then they beat Sydney and probably could have lost. And Sydney's form, because they're so young, hasn't been great. They lost that up in the weekend. They'd lost 5 or 6 in a row, or 4 or 5 in a row. So because they, and we're an industry, because they win, And I read somewhere, oh, they're in good, back in form. And I thought, no, they're not playing well. Mm. And then it was last week against Hawthorn, got belted. This week got belted. So their form line for 4 or 5 weeks hasn't been great. And so they're in a trough. And I don't know if I can see them getting out of it. I know Kelly's back. He'd be better for the run. Cameron's to come back. They said a corked hamstring. So whether that's a cover-up for their fitness staff again, because they got another soft tissue injury, only time will tell. So I really struggling for them to have any impact at all in the finals.
One of the interesting things about the Giants is that everyone seems to want to make an excuse for their injuries, whereas Essendon's had a lot of injury concerns, Richmond's had a lot of injury concerns,
Collingwood,
and it's like, oh, well, you know, they'll be better, and they've got this and that. Whereas,
but they've had them for years, so there's got to be something internally wrong.
Right.
There's got to be something about their program or the staff that is a problem for
them. But they haven't been able to cope with the injuries. Essendon has, Collingwood has, Richmond has. The Giants, it's almost like they've put up the white flag. Oh, we haven't got these players, so we can't do it. They gave up in the second half against the Bulldogs.
Yeah, they struggled for run, which is normally their go.
Absolutely did. They just stopped running.
Mm. And there's effort and effort. People say, oh, players always try. I think we had the discussion last week.
We did, yeah.
But there's levels of effort, isn't there? There's a minimum effort required, and there's an extreme effort, which you expect in finals. But from week to week, sometimes it fluctuates, but not to the level that it's been.
It felt soulless, and if I was Stephen Cornelio watching that, you go,
I'm asking.
I don't know whether it might just be too hard. I don't know if I was looking at that going, I don't like that. I don't like what I saw.
He would have been looking at the joy and the love at Marvel Stadium and the brown and gold. That's what he'd been looking at yesterday, Stephen. That's what he'd been looking at.
Brown and gold, you reckon?
Well, apparently he's told... Who was it saying on the weekend?
Hamish McLaughlin,
brother of Gil.
Former business partner... business partner of Stephen Cornelio is Hamish McLaughlin.
Is that right?
That's why there was this link.
He was saying that Carlton had been told, allegedly, that Stephen is not going to Carlton. It just opens the door for the Mighty Hawks, BJ.
Or GWS.
Or stays there at GWS, as you rightly say. That is going to be one of these storylines we'll absolutely be covering.
Or is there a Lance Franklin finals club out there with a Hail Mary that we haven't spoken about?
That would be another good story. I like those Lance Franklin stories.
Go back home to WA.
I like those stories.
No, I don't think you'll go there.
Well, it's only Fremantle. West Coast can't afford him.
Fremantle can, absolutely.
I don't think he's going home.
They could use him, but the Giants need to get themselves together because they've got a finals campaign. It's going to be short-lived, though, the way they're tracking at the moment. They've got the Gold Coast Suns this week on the Gold Coast to get themselves some confidence.
I don't think that's a good thing for them.
No. Well, at least they might get some confidence. Mm. At least they might get a win and start to...
But if they win by 20 points, there's not a lot of confidence coming out of that.
Yeah, you'd want to win by 50 minimum,
I don't
think
they'll have any trouble beating the Gold Coast by a big margin.
They'll need to win by at least 50. Well, at least.
I mean, it could have made a big difference, but you can't control the weather. I think we, most importantly, had to get ourselves to a score where we felt we were in control of the game. We managed to do that. Ben played exceptionally well. Some couple of really good partnerships. And then we threw everything we could at them. Fair play to Australia. They managed to hold on.
The second test was a draw at Lord's. That is the voice of Joe Root, the captain of England, who'd be... We'd be disappointed. Maybe an opportunity lost with the rain delay at Lord's through the last 5 days. Maybe they could have even the series up at 1-1 had things gone to plan, I suppose. Cameron White has been good enough to join us in the studio to discuss the second test and the action so far and what it might mean going forward. One of our all-time greats in Australian cricket. Whitey, good morning.
Morning, Half. How are you going?
Going very well, thanks.
That's why.
Do you get some more sleep when there's rain delays?
A little bit more. But it obviously pushes the night later in, later into the morning, doesn't it? So... Yeah, well, geez, the series has just stepped up a notch, hasn't it? Jofra Archer's just brought a new dimension to the whole thing, so that's quick.
That's quick. Tell me what you were thinking as you were watching that all unfold. Even before Steve Smith copped those whacks on the elbow and then obviously in the side of the neck, what were you thinking?
Well, I'm still probably, when Steve Smith's batting there and before that spell, I'm looking at Steve Smith just going, what can I come on radio and talk more about Steve Smith, because it's unbelievable, isn't it? It's just 100, then 90, so thank Christ he's playing. that was my main thought, and then obviously Archer, produces 96 mile an hour in a spell, as Adam's already sort of said, just know with a 70 year old, what am I trying to say?
70 over old?
70, over bold. Ball. Yep, that's it.
An old ball.
Yeah, an old ball, anyway. on a flat, oh, not a flat, but a slow wicket. And so it just really cranked up from there.
You've faced him, and we've talked about it before, but what's it like facing him? Put us in that zone of seeing a guy just casually amble up to the crease and bowl thunderbolt.
Yeah, well, that's where it's probably a bit different, because most of those guys that bowl extremely quick like he does have, you know, they have quite a long run up, and you know, you've got a lot of time to really see it coming, sort of thing. But this is totally different. It's just happens very quickly. It's a short run. It's very, you know, it's a quick run. And the thing about his bowling, it's obviously quick, but he's very tall and releases it from a very high point. So it's very steep as well, which is probably the most nastiest thing about the whole thing.
Do you get scared as a batsman?
I've
talked to you about this before, because I got a fright watching Mitchell Johnson from side on, where you sit at Etihad Stadium when he's bowling 152, 153 in a Big Bash game, where you couldn't actually see the ball from side on.
Always looks worse from side on as well when you're sitting there
waiting to bat. Like, do you get scared? Do you get worried about your safety? Do you... what's it like?
Oh, geez. Yeah, you probably... In today's day and age, with probably what's happened, you know, in the past, you sort of, it's in the back of your mind a bit more, no doubt. And obviously when Steve Smith got hit there, that, you know, it's a very, very similar spot to where Phil Hughes unfortunately got hit. So, and that was the first thing that would have come into everyone's mind, I'm sure. But yeah, look, there is that element now that you can get really hurt. So yeah, when someone's bowling that quick, you've obviously got to be, you know, very sharp and on your game. So, but look, you just have to try and focus on what you need to do to make sure gives you the best chance to sort of make a few runs and obviously not get hurt as well.
Because we were talking about that, BJ, about what you're thinking. And you said, that you don't have time to think. So what do you have time to do?
Just very reactionary, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, well, obviously you've got lots of time to think. When someone's bowling like that, you think more, don't you? And after the ball's been bowled or when you're sitting there waiting, you've had, there's lots of things going through your mind, isn't there? So, and then in between balls, but... yeah, like it's amazing how you think that someone's bowling that fast. You think, how can your body possibly, you know, what is it, 0.6 of a second or half a second or whatever it is to move? But somehow you sort of do. And obviously some players move quicker than others. And someone like Steve Smith seems to still have a lot of time when someone's bowling that fast. So, yeah, you just try and, you know, implement the same, you know, thought process and body position to try and, you know, to score some runs, and hopefully you're in a decent enough position if it's up around your head.
So you faced Jofra with the white ball,
yep.
But what about him with the red ball? Because you haven't seen much of him with the red ball, and particularly in those conditions.
Yeah, that's right. And it was, you know, it can be a touch gloomy, especially throughout this game at certain stages as well, which can make it a bit more difficult. So, but yeah, I've only faced him with the white ball. There was a lot of talk, you know, especially from Justin Langer about how he would go throughout the test match, and it'll be interesting with only a 3-day break between the test 2 and 3, how he'll back up. But, yeah, I can't really comment too much other than just obviously what you can see on telly there about his bowling with red ball, and his record's exceptional if you have a look at his county record as well. So let's see how he goes in test 3.
So Steve Smith gets hit on the arm. What do you see change? Because he found himself in a really awkward position when he got hit, which I haven't seen him get into too often, that position.
Yeah, I guess, he goes, when someone's bowling that fast, it's not just as simple as it, like, I'm, you know, I'll get into a position and hook it sort of thing. I think he went into a mindset where he thought, geez, this bloke's bowling real quick. It's almost too quick to, you know, play those certain shots, you know, the hook and the pull off. So he had to go into more of a, you know, defensive sort of mindset where he was getting right back and a lot of weight on the back foot. And then obviously with the, you know, some weren't bouncing as much, like that one hit him on the arm as much as what they weren't as consistent. So, he just obviously found himself, like, you know, saw Marnus Labuschagne last night. Just imagine if he wasn't wearing a grill, Jeff Lawson style. Geez, that would have been brutal as well. So, yeah, it's obviously when someone's bowling that quick, you can't just go, all right, I'm just going to either hook it or tap it around and try and get off strike. You're in a bit more defensive mindset, trying to survive, see the, you know, wear him down and try and see the fast bowlers spell off. So, yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how it sort of plays out for the rest of the series, and it'll be interesting to see how our fast bowlers sort of react to bowling to Jofra when he gets out to bat. I'd imagine we're going to go extremely hard at him. I'd be surprised if we don't come round the wicket straight away and just give him some of his own sort of medicine back, I reckon. I think we've got no choice.
It seemed half that because of the Lord's slope, that from the end he was bowling at, the ball started to follow the batsman, so with the angle. So I reckon
that one last night especially, it was like a 150-kilometre off-break, wasn't it? Just seemed straight back into Marnus trying to lean back and avoid and just bang.
So I think that happened a few times that they thought, I'm okay here. With the line of the ball, I can just sort of not even need to bother about ducking, and then it just starts following you. That's terrifying.
Yeah, and with that steep bounce of Jofra, it's not as probably short as like someone like, you know, other sort of fast bowlers bowling, you know, bounces. His short ball is actually a touch fuller, if that makes any sense.
Yeah. Yep. That makes sense. It makes it much harder to play.
Yep.
Absolutely. So there's a whole lot of his arsenal that makes it difficult to face.
Mm.
And when, as you say, with a 70 over old ball.
Yeah, no, I'll just leave that one. What's old ball.
What's your opinion? What's your opinion on in the next test with the Australian quicks and who misses out, who comes in?
I'm pretty sure James Pattinson will come back in. Who did I leave out? I think Sids has bowled exceptionally well and was very unlucky throughout this test match. Had a lot of drop chances. But do we go super aggressive and just play them all now? Sort of, you know, Pat, Josh, and Pato back in as well. So I think that might be the lineup.
Well, the fifth quickest pitch in the world. Coming up.
Who's got bringing those stats
quick
up?
Fizz.
All right.
We've got all this data these days, mate. It's unbelievable.
It's quicker than all our pitches in Australia. Leeds. Not sure. You're going to go off the data.
It's Colo, wasn't it?
Yeah, no, it's Quick Viz.
Fifth quickest, not the first four. We've got the first four here.
Should make for good viewing, if that's the case.
Well, that's what we're thinking. And if you're going to bring them all back, all the quicks back, all the real heat bowlers, then chances are it's going to be great viewing.
Yep.
Because they're fragile a bit at the top of the order, which is a bit of a concern from Australia, because if Joe Root and Jason Roy get going, if they play, if Roy anyway plays in the third test, we'll be chasing 350, 400, which we haven't had to do just yet.
Why? Yeah, that's right. And I think both teams obviously got a few little issues with, you know, probably more with their batting order more than anything, which we probably knew going into the start of the series. It's been a bit of a bowl off so far, I guess you could say. But obviously, yeah, Roy at the top of the order with the Poms and, you know, Bancroft and Khawaja, even Warner not getting any runs through us so far. So it'll be interesting to see what we do. I'm not sure about our batting order. I think they'll stick with Bancroft again. I think maybe the one that might be under a little bit of pressure is maybe Khawaja. I know, as weird as it sort of sounds, he's got a couple of starts, but yeah, I just think they might be looking, especially with Marnus now coming in and doing very well last night, making 50 off, you know, over 100 balls and helping us save the test. But yeah, I'm not sure. Obviously, we've got to wait on Steve Smith's fitness as well.
He's an intriguing person, Marnus Labuschagne.
He's bought a lot of overs in county cricket this year. He's bought a lot.
19 wickets, wasn't it?
I don't know. I just keep hearing about the overs he's bowled.
He always scored more runs than anyone in Division 2.
Oh, he's made 1,000 runs,
But his record at Shield Cricket is only okay, and he didn't have a great summer last summer, but he seems to get runs at important times or in difficult conditions. I mean, he was one that got quite a few in the intra-club. In difficult conditions. And then to come out and do what he did is pretty impressive. He wasn't playing in the match.
Yeah, I know.
Come out and essentially save Australia.
It's interesting because I think he got picked in the Sydney Test. Was it either last year or the year before, averaging 24?
Last year,
finished the Australian summer averaging 21. Goes to County Division 2, gets a few hundreds and gets picked and now makes 50, having not been even on the team sheet.
That's right.
So, yeah, it's an interesting one, isn't it? And now, by doing so, he's probably, as I just said, that he's putting a few blokes under the pump. So he's right in calculations probably for the third test.
Because I was kind of thinking, well, what would they do if Smith, this is before Marnus batted, what would they do if Smith couldn't play? Because they've only got two reserve batsmen, Labuschagne and Harris. So would they bat Harris at three, or they put Bancroft down to three and Khawaja to four, and then all of a sudden Labuschagne comes out and does what he does. You kind of got to play him because Langer loves him.
That was the best of the Breakfast Club. If you want to hear the full interviews again, go straight to the website, rsn.net.au.